Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo, Aaron Alvarado, and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. All right, Aaron Alvarado, you saw Guardians of the Galaxy today, and we're going to talk about it.
I am Groot.
You are Groot.
I am Groot.
How glad are you that they got Vin Diesel to reprise his role for Baby Groot?
So incredibly necessary. Good job.
Not only did they go and get Vin Diesel to take a break, by the way. I got to imagine he recorded his lines like while in Cuba filming Fate of the Furious. But not only did they get Vin Diesel, it means he gets this credit in the, you know, where they do the with so-and-so Vin Diesel as Groot.
He got the and. He definitely got the and. So.
And it's.
Congratulations, look, Vin.
You've got to figure, because Vin's getting the same billing as Bradley Cooper here, the same voice billing. If you're Bradley Cooper, you got to be, are you a little miffed? Like a little bit? Because Brad's doing some work.
I think he is doing work, and I didn't keep track, but I'm just off the top of my head, I think that Bradley Cooper got more dialogue in this movie than he did in the first one. That's just my perception.
So. That was my same perception. No factual basis for that, but it definitely felt like it.
Well, it came at the cost of Groot, because we got a lot less Groot, we got a lot less Star-Lord, we got more Bradley Cooper, and we got way more Drax, so...
I'm excited to talk about that because you can tell sometimes in sequels when there is a response, like a direct response to the fan reaction.
Oh yeah.
And Drax being such a big hit in the first one, which I think that they didn't expect. I think having Batista perform as well as he did, and his lines, I mean, the dialogue was great. I mean, they wrote great stuff for him, but he just delivered it in such a good, properly deadpan way that they really amped it up in the second one.
Oh yeah, no, I think that was a priority.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally agree. I'm excited to get into the details of that. We do have some movie news that we're going to go over first, and then we will go into our thoughts on Guardians of the Galaxy. I'd mentioned this before. I wish Skylar was here to talk about this one, because Guardians is his very favorite of the Marvel movies. And I don't remember where it ranks for you.
It's somewhere in the top 15 or so.
Top 15? There's 15 movies.
So I think it's safely in there. Skylar is actually, he's choked up right now, or else he'd be joining us.
That's true. He's still pretty emotional after that ending. Which when we get to, we'll spoil. But
we're gonna go heavy spoilers.
So
everyone knows.
Plus, according to the box office receipts are telling me anything, everyone in the world saw it.
And half the world saw it twice. So
yeah, no kidding.
Before we go into anything, will you see it again? Is my question.
Oh yeah, you're asking me that right now.
Will you see it again in the movie theaters?
You know, what's funny is I had an opportunity to, because I saw the Thursday evening 7 o'clock showtime, mm-hmm. and our my work had actually rented out a theater. I didn't know this till after, they didn't announce it till after I bought my ticket. They rented out a theater for Friday afternoon for the whole company, and I was considering going. I ended up not, and so would I see it again? I don't know. I will definitely watch it again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Would I pay to see it again in theaters? Probably not.
Yeah, I'm in that same boat. But I guess we'll get into it.
We'll get into it. Definitely doesn't mean I didn't like it, to be clear.
Sure.
To be clear, that is not an indication that I didn't enjoy it. Before
you're just a pinch penny. That's the thing. Like, you're very frugal.
Exactly. Yeah. Star Wars are the only... That's the only... Star Wars and The Replacements with Keanu Reeves. The only movies that will see multiple paid viewings by me.
I think you've actually seen The Replacements more than the director and the editor combined.
Certainly more than Gene Hackman, who had no interest in being in that movie. it's an underrated sports movie. I stand by that.
It's a top five Gene Hackman performance.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
World top Tenenbaums. Keanu Reeves.
Royal Tenenbaums is number one on that Hackman list. but let's get into this movie news, and then we'll I know we're both salivating at the chance to sink our teeth in this Guardians review. But first, to talk about something decidedly less exciting, Split finishes its box office run with a worldwide total of $275 million on what is an alleged or reported $10 million budget. Do you believe that that's how much it cost?
No, that's artificially low. I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah.
But any way that you cut it, even if it costs twice that, the return on investment is huge. So you have to hand it to M. Night, and I can't remember the other producer's name, but...
it doesn't matter.
They did a bang-up job, and they made a ton of money off of it. So I'm hoping that we get four or five Split movies. Each one of the characters deserves his own movie, her own movie as well. So
I want the Hedwig movie, and I want it to be G. I want it to be G-rated. I want it to be like Blue's Clues style.
Yeah.
Partly animated.
Nope. The sad part is we're going to get like half of the movies, and McAvoy's going to get tired of doing the characters, so we're going to get a replacement. Kind of like The Mask 2, where Jamie Kennedy replaced Jim Carrey as The Mask.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
The son of The Mask.
Who are we going to get to replace? We could get Scott Eastwood. To replace.
Oh, that's good.
I only say that just because I'm still on the heels of my rant about the world not needing Scott Eastwood to act. I don't even know who you'd put in to replace James McAvoy. Who's another, like, British? Let's see. Gosh, I feel like there's so many British actors.
Here's the problem. I don't even know who's British anymore because every actor does an American accent.
That's true.
They all trick me until I see the behind the scenes or like a regular interview with them. So I can't even pull a British actor.
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny because it's true.
I'm just going to say Patrick Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
Just replace him with Patrick Stewart.
They're already, James McAvoy and Patrick Stewart are already, tied together forever through X-Men. So why not? the $10 million number could be legit. I mean, we know M. Night has a history of being able to make films on a shoestring budget. Although what's funny is like the Hollywood accountants or whatever, they do this like fancy financial accounting to
the funny math
to technically not have a profit or whatever. It's gonna be really hard to do that here. It's gonna be really hard. But I trust them. I trust that they'll do it.
Is this your favorite M. Night movie? Oh, now that it's all said and done?
Easily. It's got to be easily my favorite M. Night movie about sexual assault and sexual molestation. Easily. Mm-hmm. And if you really think about it, all of his movies actually have that theme.
A best M. Night cameo. I think that's... we've settled that now.
Well, certainly the best M. Night... wig in a cameo. gosh. I really, the more time I've had to really think about it and think clearly about the movie, like the more I truly hate it. I really despise the movie.
I read these people's, I don't know if it's just they're looking back on the low expectations.
Yeah. I think so.
Or they're seeing these huge box office numbers. And they're thinking, wow, this was actually a pretty good movie. Yeah. It's not. It's a bad movie.
It is a bad movie.
So.
I think everyone loves an underdog story. Everyone wants to be redeemed. Like, actors like, with Matthew McConaughey, we had the McConaissance, It's like, oh, yeah, people are back. They're, and I think people want that, which is not a bad thing to want. But, it's being artificially placed here in M. Night. Like, look, this is more of the same. Like, we can't grade Split on the M. Night scale. Like, yes. Is it better than the last few of his movies? Yeah. But the last few of his movies are like some of the worst cinema ever. So it's like, we can't pretend like this is a good movie just because it's better than the last few. It's better than After Earth and The Last Airbender and Lady in the Water. It's just, look, it's a bad movie.
It is a bad movie. And all that being said, I am 100% in for the Unbreakable sequel.
Well, yeah, that's my favorite. Bruce Willis. It's my favorite M. Night film. So
yeah. And you love Bruce Willis.
Well, I do love Bruce Willis. there is a, knowing that there's a less than 2% chance of it being a good movie, I'm still going to go see it. So,
yeah.
Still going to go see it. Speaking of Samuel Jackson, I did watch a film today for the first time. It took me a while to get around to it. I saw Kingsman.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that because there's the, you know, the sequel's coming yes. out and there's big news about it. What'd yeah. you think of it?
It was fine. It was okay. I think it's a type of film that you want to go in with no like, it surprised a lot of people because it had little fanfare, mm-hmm. and it kind of became a kind of this cult hit, and I became victim to those expectations, I think, because so many people told me, like, oh, you got to watch Kingsman. You're going to love it. And it was fine. It was entertaining. I couldn't help but feel like it was kind of a run-of-the-mill spy fare, except right. they wanted to be, like, shockingly, like, violent.
Right.
It was kind of their thing, you know? But, like, story-wise, it was kind of, like, the very predictable,
incredibly
kind of reluctant
average, right?
hero, has to yeah. step into his father's shoes, kind of, like, very, very, very run-of-the-mill in that way. And so it was fine. It was fine.
I never finished it. I've tried watching it a couple of times. But I think that it's in the same vein of, like, a movie like Taken.
Yeah.
Where you don't expect it. You don't expect Liam Neeson to play this part.
Right.
And, like, on its face value, incredibly by the numbers type of thriller. And I think that Kingsman is like in a similar vein.
Because Colin Firth?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know what it was. But it's like, you know, like we've seen a million spy movies like that already. Yeah. So just like a cheaper James Bond, I guess.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I didn't like it.
Yeah. So, I mean, Taron Egerton was fine in it, I guess. But.
Right.
I guess I'm glad he wasn't. Han Solo, because he was like the runner up.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah, it was down. Yeah, it was really between him and Alden Ehrenreich. And I don't doubt that he could get the charisma, and I don't doubt that he could get the American accent down. actually, I do very much doubt that. But Alden looks so much more like him, and I just think his stuff in Hail Caesar still just has me so excited to see what he's gonna do.
Hail Caesar is on HBO right now, so it's like it's constantly on, and every once in a while I'll just tune back in. It's funny, man.
It's
a funny movie,
and there's just
I don't understand why it was so poorly received. That's a funny movie.
It is, and it's a good one to pop in just for a sequence, whether it's Channing uh-huh. Tatum's like sailor scene dance sequence, or some of George Clooney's stuff to yeah. Hobie Doyle. Big fan of that movie. I think history will look kindly upon it.
I hope so.
So, me too.
With the Coens, like, you never know. Some of their stuff just seems to be forgotten.
Like, A Serious Man is like...
Serious Man's a good movie.
And it was very forgotten.
Yeah, unfortunately. Not appreciated.
No, not at all. All right. Moving on to more news. we were texting about this today. Edge of Tomorrow. The film, the shockingly good Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt film
mm-hmm.
with a great Bill Paxton performance that was so mishandled in the marketing department by Warner Brothers that they kind of unofficially renamed it on the Blu-ray release by not actually changing the title, but like putting the words Live, Die, Repeat really big on the box.
In every piece of material, promotional material, you see Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah, it... really, really drives me crazy, and this is a well-worn rant on this pod, but it's a great, really great movie, and it still made decent money worldwide, like $275, I believe.
Yeah, it was up there in the high twos. And I think it actually made more money worldwide than in the United States.
Oh, definitely did. Yeah, it only made about $100 in the United States.
Only.
Well, the movie costs like $160, $170, something like that.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, it looks expensive, so I get it. But it's I really like this movie. Now, I don't know how much – I don't buy this story. Let me be upfront here. I don't think this is a real story. I don't think this is really true. Not that I doubt it was said, but like this movie's not going to be named this. And this is what the story is. Is it Doug Liman, that the director of the first one, says that Emily Blunt and Tom Cruise are both in for the sequel, which is great news. It doesn't look like we have a timeline yet for their availability for when they're going to both make and release this, but they're both in. And Doug Liman, in what I believe to be just the most troll move Honestly, I think he's trolling WB, their marketing department. But he says that the film will be called Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat. Which is, it's hilarious. I think it's a great
like
joke.
That's like the old Pete and Repeat go in a boat. Pete falls out. Who's left? Repeat.
Do you think he's serious? Do you think he's just messing with them? I mean,
I hope that it's a joke because that's a, it's a terrible title. That's an embarrassingly bad title.
Yeah.
My question is, what's wrong with the actual title that the movie was given?
So, like the Edge of Tomorrow you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, before that, before it was called Edge of Tomorrow,
The source material is based on, yeah, All You Need Is Kill.
That's the one.
So I'm saying if they made the mistake of not using it the first go around, just use it for number two.
Right.
So that's my first. I mean, that's very easy. Let's just right the wrong. All You Need Is Kill. You get Edge of Tomorrow. All You Need Is Kill. And I mean, not that they really need to tie it to the first one. I mean, clearly they didn't feel the need to tie it to it, even in the actual Blu-ray release. Right. So, and then the other one is like, if we want dumb titles based on the first one, if Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat, why don't you just do Edge of Today?
That's great. I mean, that.
Edge of Today, Edge of Yesterday. I mean, like.
Oh, how about Edgier of Tomorrow?
Edgier of Tomorrow. Sharper Edge of Tomorrow. I mean, you could get real bad here, but none of those are as bad as Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat.
That is a terrible choice.
Yeah, that's why I don't buy this story. And people are you know, they're reporting it at face value because Doug Liman said it, you know, in a not joking manner. But there's no way he was serious.
If I'm Emily Blunt and that's like my director comes out and says that's going to be the title, I'm out.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. I'm not in anymore.
No. Yeah. Also, she should push for more, like even more top billing. Like she should push for a bigger. She needs to be bigger on the poster than Tom Cruise.
Well, in real life, she's bigger than Tom Cruise.
That's true.
But she should be top billing. This is actually, I mean, she should be the lead, and it should be featuring Tom Cruise.
Yes.
Whenever they.
Yes. Starring Emily Blunt with, rest in peace, Bill Paxton, but with Bill Paxton and Tom Cruise.
The spirit of Bill Paxton introducing Tom Cruise.
Can we use some of the cut scenes from The Circle of Bill Paxton and use him in the sequel?
I think they said this is a prequel, right?
Oh, is it?
No, perfect. I don't know.
Well, it could be.
So, yeah, Doug Liman said something about, like, first of all, he's famously a weird guy.
Yeah.
And, like, he's an oddball. And someone asked him about the movie, the sequel. And he claimed that the original movie is actually a prequel to a sequel, whatever that means.
Oh, it's so perfect. I guess, if it's a prequel to a sequel, then it's just present day.
Or something stupid like that. But thanks, Doug.
All right. This next. You want to talk about this next one?
What was the next one on the list?
Rian Johnson asked J.J. Abrams to change a specific part of the ending of The Force Awakens.
Yeah, of course, you know, we're doing a new episode, so we always have to talk Star Wars.
Right.
The latest thing that came out, this came out earlier in the week, was that Rian Johnson specifically made a request of J.J. Abrams to change the very last ending sequence to The Force Awakens. I don't know what the details are. Do you know what he asked them to change?
I do, yeah. Did you not read the story?
No, I don't want any spoilers. So,
oh, no spoilers.
I'm talking about The Force Awakens. I don't want that spoiled. I don't want to know how it ended.
Oh, that's right. You never finished it.
No. I'm waiting for all three of the new ones to come out, and then I'm going to go back and watch it.
But have you not read the story?
Yeah, I read the story.
Oh, okay.
But I figured Star Wars is like, that's your wheelhouse. So,
oh, sure.
I'm going to let you revel in it.
Yeah, yeah. What's really interesting that he would make this request in... There are some rumors that Rian Johnson actually asked for a few other things, even more than rumors. In fact, I think J.J. Abrams may have brought up that there was, and it could have been something really small. I get the sense that Rian Johnson's a very particular type of director. And I think he asked J.J. Abrams for a handful of things, and I think J.J. Abrams said no I have no idea what it was, but I think there were a handful of things in The Force Awakens that J.J. Abrams wasn't willing to change. But the one thing that Ryan Johnson confirmed he did change was having R2-D2 at the very end go in the Millennium Falcon with Rey and Chewbacca instead of BB-8, who was originally going to be the one that went with him.
Right.
And so, I mean, we can only speculate as to why that would be super important to Ryan Johnson. I think, you know, a good portion, certainly of the first act and maybe even the second, is going to be spent on that island. And I think Ryan Johnson wanted that reunion of R2 and Luke, the type of reunion that, you know, you wouldn't get if it were BB-8.
Right.
Plus, they sidelined R2 in the worst way in The Force Awakens, like one of my few major gripes of the film. And so...
well, he had a bigger part in Rogue One, didn't he?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yeah. Just about. His cameo in Rogue One was, you know, on par screen time. And so... Yeah, I like that. I like this move for a few reasons. One I mentioned, you know, the reunion with Luke, whatever that will entail. And then having BB-8 back with Poe Dameron, who's probably my favorite character of the new, you know, new movies, new trilogy. So, like, having them back together, I think, makes sense. And then, yeah, it'll be interesting. There's got to be something more significant.
I think so, and also there's the symbolism of Rey doing her training with the Master, which is, you know, like Luke doing his training with Yoda, right? So I guess there's that connection, which I hope that's not why he did it, because we've already had so much of that with The Force Awakens. Like, let's move on from the connections to the old movies, so, please.
So did Ryan Johnson responded on Twitter to someone who was talking about this.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, it was great.
I'm banned from Twitter, so I don't know.
Oh, that's right. That. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You and Martin Shkreli or whatever.
Uh-huh. Me and Milo.
Yeah, you and Milo. So someone was. It was funny because I don't remember if Ryan Johnson was necessary. He had to have been tagged at some point in the conversation. I doubt
he. Oh, just- no, he just searches out Star Wars stuff.
Yeah. Twitter. Right. Exactly. Yeah. He goes through the millions of tweets a day. He had to have been tagged along the way, but. Someone was talking about their excitement about The Last Jedi, blah, blah, blah. And some person came through and some Star Wars quote-unquote fan said, why even bother with Last Jedi? It's just going to be a carbon copy of The Empire Strikes Back anyway. More of the same. Everything is copied from, you know, something from before. And Rian Johnson went in and he's like, yes, that's it. He said in essence, yes, that's exactly what I set out to do. I wanted to make an exact copy of The Empire Strikes Back. And was just like super sarcastic, you know, and replied again, like, trust me, I had, cause someone may have said there's something in the reply about how like Disney may have, kind of either forced him into that or stifled his creativity. And he was quick to say like, he's had more creative freedom on this film than anything he's worked on or just as much. And said like, I didn't set out to just make The Empire Strikes Back again. Like, his initial tweet was hilarious because it was just like, yes, I spent all this time and with one goal, and that was to make The Empire Strikes Back again. So obviously he's mindful of it. We don't need to do this thing where we reassure Star Wars fans that they're not doing the prequels, that J.J. Abrams had that goal in mind. He was like so big on practical effects, so big on we can get back to the good storytelling that, what maybe if anything suffered, it was, you know, originality. I just don't think that's going to be in any way, shape, or form an issue in Last Jedi. I think we're going to see the most unique Star Wars film we've ever seen. So much so that I think it will be polarizing.
I hope so, because I'm ready for some controversy.
Oh, I think I think this movie is going to be polarizing.
And I think it's to be honest, the series needs it. Because I think there is a bit of fatigue of Star Wars. Now, you were telling me before... we were talking about how the Star Wars teaser trailer that just came out is only like the top 15 most viewed trailers of all time or something like that.
Within the first 24 hours. Yeah.
Okay. So within the first 24 hours, it's number
15.
Number 15.
Which is crazy.
And what's number one?
Number one is the It trailer. The It trailer that came out March 31st.
Mm-hmm.
They had just shy of 200 million views in the first 24 hours. And in that same period of time, The Last Jedi had 43 million.
That is wild to me. To me, I think that possibly is trending on some sort of fatigue of Star Wars. I hope that's not the case. because it's still, I think, a rich environment. And
well, I can't imagine. I mean, the box office numbers aren't indicating that fatigue. Yeah.
Now, my question is, where do they compile that those stats from? Is that like from the official YouTube page, or is that all, you know, all the people that also upload it, or is that combined?
So that's a good question. I'm willing to bet this is just the one, you know, video from the official one.
And that's also part of my theory. If it's just from the official YouTube page, then that would make sense, because it doesn't have a million fans uploading mirror copies of that video, whereas Star Wars.
That's a good, okay.
Hundreds of people uploaded that.
You're right. There's an immediate, like, I mean, if you search Last Jedi trailer, you will have in the top first 10, you will have videos that are in the millions of views.
Yeah.
That are people that have uploaded mirrors or a quick little commentary at the beginning and then it's the trailer. Right. Or whatever.
Well, my favorite was the fan trailers that came out like a week before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's so stupid. They take these clips, like these cutscenes from video games. And edit them together, and they're like, The Last Jedi trailer, and then parentheses, kind of, or sort of, or whatever.
Or leaked. It was leaked, like Last Jedi. Yes,
they're all over Facebook, leaked. Especially. And people fall for this? It's so weird.
Well, that's where I saw it. And the one that I saw had something like 10 million views.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Are you kidding me? People think this is real?
They think it's real. Wow. Yeah, it's remarkable. Bad. That's a good theory on the It one, because I just couldn't reconcile my mind how. In 24 hours, it would have close to 200 million views when The Last Jedi had 43. And I felt like the world stopped to watch The Last Jedi trailer when it dropped. The same for Force Awakens, which on this list, The Force Awakens is number 6 with 112 million views in the first 24 hours. I mean, it's number 6 below 50 Shades Darker, Beauty and the Beast, Thor Ragnarok, The Fate of the Furious, and then It. Which is... Yeah.
Where is the circle on there on that list?
Oh, yeah. It's number, it looks like it's number 22.
Okay.
Oh, gosh. Oh, it's amazing how much better the trailer is than the actual finished product. The trailer looks like there could be some semblance of a good film there.
Oh, yeah. And did you say 50 Shades Darker was on there?
It's ridiculous. It's number 5. It's ahead of Force Awakens. 114 million. So it had 2 million more than The Force Awakens.
50 Shades Darker, is that the sequel to Get Out?
Oh, gosh. Oh, no.
I might be mistaken. I'm not familiar with that movie. So.
That could be right. I don't know. I didn't see 50 Shades Darker. Oh, gosh. You can say that. You are a person of color.
Yeah.
Not a joke I would make.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that. My wife and I are going to Hawaii at the end of the month.
Oh, yeah.
And when I come back from Hawaii, I will be significantly darker.
Oh, you'll be several shades darker. Oh, yeah. I've seen you when you've come back from Hawaii. It's remarkable.
Yeah. No, it's true.
No, I'm jealous. I burn. I burn and I burn. Doesn't matter what type of suntan lotion. It doesn't matter. I'll burn. I'll get red and it's terrible. It peels. It's just disgusting. So, anyway, it's tough being a white person. I'm kidding.
I wouldn't know. So.
All right.
Hey, have you watched, are you on, you have Netflix, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Are you watching the Dear White People series?
No. No, I'm not.
I'm hearing nothing but good things about it, so.
Is it, yeah. It's gotten, I mean, I don't use Rotten Tomatoes for TV shows too much because I don't think they get enough reviews in there for that to really be a reliable source, but.
Yeah.
I have seen the number, and it looks to be a high one.
Well, last I heard, it was 100%.
Oh, okay. So you haven't watched it?
No.
Well, it's addressed to me, so I probably should check it out.
I think you should check it out and then give a full review.
Okay.
And let us know the lessons that you learned and if you're employing those tactics.
Oh, I absolutely will. The Netflix show that I keep hearing about is this 13 Reasons Why. Also, one I'm never going to watch that one, actually.
No, it's like it's about teen suicide.
Yeah,
or
no thanks.
Right?
Yeah. No thanks. Not the line that hooks me.
No.
But they just renewed it, of course. Last here we have Terminator 2 3D trailer. I didn't click on this one.
This is wild. So James Cameron, for whatever reason, decides that he needs to make more money off of the Terminator franchise.
Yeah.
So he's gone back. And he's personally oversaw the I don't even know what they do to make it three to make a original 2D movie. You know, one of my friends is actually in he does computer graphics, and he does like digital art and all that stuff. And he was explaining to me one time like how they take a 2D movie and they make it 3D, because one of the movies he works on, they did that. And he was telling me the whole process involved and how it's just incredibly painstaking, and it's just a huge just annoyance. And I zoned out when he was telling me about it. It was just too technical for me. But apparently James Cameron is doing this for the original T2, for Terminator 2. He's gone back. He's done all these changes, affected the lighting and whatnot, and he's turned it into a 3D movie, which, why not, right? It's the thing we were asking for with Terminator 2. Let's make it 3D and re-release it.
Haven't I seen this at Universal Studios? Isn't this a ride? Like,
it was a ride. Yeah, it sure was.
I don't want this. I don't want any films to be re-released in 3D. I'm not interested. I had to see Guardians of the Galaxy in 3D because I wanted to see IMAX, and that, I'm like, right. I'm willing to be forced to, you know, see it in 3D because it's only offered in 3D and IMAX. It's not a great experience.
It's just such a gimmick, and I'm tired of it personally.
Yeah, I am too. But yeah, James Cameron still thinks it's like that's where technology needs to be and needs to continue to be developed, and that's how he's making these Avatar movies, isn't that?
Sure. Yeah. It's funny, if you watch the trailer, the trailer is not in 3D, obviously, but they show you specifically some of the scenes that will get the 3D treatment, just so you can envision it.
Oh, great!
And it's just like so pointless. Like one of the scenes where Arnold is he's going through the mall trying to protect John,
the opening
and he
scene.
Has the he has the bouquet, and there's a shotgun in the bouquet of roses.
Yeah,
like that's one of the scenes they show you, so obviously that's going to be in 3D.
Okay, let me guess,
one of the scenes. Guess
John, I mean, I was gonna say John Patrick or Robert Patrick. The T-1000 when he sticks his arm through the door.
Of course. That's going to be one. And there's one shot where the T-1000 gets the shotgun blast to the head, and there's like a hole inside of his head.
Of course. Yeah.
So that's going to be 3D as well.
You sold me.
This is just such a great idea. I cannot wait to see it.
Why does he do this?
I don't know.
He's delayed the release of these Avatar films that I'm not interested in seeing, although I will.
Yeah. I think he's just bored, to be quite honest.
It's like, I want to know how his alimony payments are structured with Catherine Bigelow. Like every movie that she releases that doesn't do well, does he have to make up for that in alimony? Like, how does that?
He's got to make up the difference. I think so.
Yeah,
I think that's part of their agreement.
Yeah, it's like what his last movie, which really last release was Avatar. He hasn't come out with anything, you know, and then she releases a movie, and it's just compared against his last release. I wonder what the state of California did there for their
arrangement. Well, he owes her, so.
She's a better filmmaker, by the way.
Well, she's the one that saved his career.
Yeah. I mean, I do love his Alien film, Aliens.
It's great. Oh, I'm wondering, can we get a Hurt Locker in 3D?
Oh, yeah. I can think of a few scenes that would be benefited.
Dude, a Point Break in 3D? Are you kidding
me? Zero Dark 30. 3D. Zero Dark 3D.
Remind me, Chris Pratt is in Zero Dark 30, right?
He is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he is. Oh, man.
Was he in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
No. I don't think he was in this one. Was he?
I didn't hear him. I didn't see him much.
So let's start. Let's start there. Let's launch right into this. We're already at the 35 minute mark. Guardians of the Galaxy, less Star-Lord.
Yeah.
Is that at all, do you think, due to having Chris Pratt less available, or do you think James Gunn actually decided to write more rocket scenes, from the get-go?
Well, people love Rocket, first of all. So I think that Bradley Cooper is more likable than Chris Pratt.
Oh.
So, yeah. Well, Chris Pratt has had a series of bombs. So I think that's what happened.
A series. Just one. Yeah. But, yeah.
It's the first in a series.
honestly, Rocket, though, was maybe my MVP of this film.
Ah, okay. So we're going to talk MVPs. I like Rocket.
I thought Rocket
was great.
He's not
my MVP, though. Rocket was better in this one. I'll say this. Rocket was better in Volume 2 than he was in Volume 1. Mm-hmm. But my MVP for this movie was Michael Rooker as Yondu.
Oh.
Is that his name, Yondu?
Yes.
I thought, yeah, he surprised me, man, because they gave him, they gave his character an actual arc.
They did.
Which was really interesting. And I thought they served him really well. Of course, if you're listening to this, you've already seen the movie.
Yes. We're going to go into spoilers.
Know,
yes.
Yeah. So you know that Yondu does die at the end. And there's some really touching moments between him and some of the other characters. But I thought they served them well. They really fleshed out his character. They gave him a purpose, really. And for that, and Michael Rooker, his performance as Yondu was fantastic. He did a really great job. So he was my MVP.
Interesting.
Yeah. My number two was Drax.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, they gave him more lines, and Batista did a really great job.
Yeah.
Number three for me, this is a surprise.
Baby Groot.
Was Sly Stallone.
Stop. Stop.
Stallone as Rocky Balboa. Stop. Which was...
Okay. So let's talk about Sly in relation to Yondu. I will say this about Michael Rooker, great actor. And yes, mm-hmm. he did very good here. I was stunned how much they focused on his character Yondu at the expense of the actual Guardians of the Galaxy, like the main cast, at the major expense of. Now, the problem with that, in my opinion, was that it kind of tipped their hand a little bit that he was going to die.
Right.
And there was an opening scene that, to me, made it clear when they established, like, his kind of the, what was it? Not the Ravagers. What were the...
You're talking about the Sovereign?
No, the group of people that Sly
Stallone. Crap, I can't remember.
It's like something. Right, I thought it was like the Ravagers. That's not right, but something like that. But towards the beginning, there's that scene where he has that encounter with Sly, and they're kind of like, "You disgraced us. You know, you'll never be a part of us." And it kind of became clear. It's like, oh, they're really digging into his backstory. I wonder if Yondu is going to see, you know, till the end of Volume 2 here. And they really, I mean, he was maybe the main character of this movie. I'm just surprised how much screen time he got. Now, I got to mention Sly here because I needed subtitles in that opening scene because I didn't understand a word he said. He starts yelling at him in a way that I was like, there are noises coming out of Sylvester Stallone's mouth that are not words in the English language, to the point that I thought, like, oh, it's a dialect here. Like, but they're not, there's no subtitles. And I'm sitting there like, why aren't they doing subtitles? And I was like, oh no, that's English. We just can't understand it.
Well, that's why I was saying he was playing Rocky Balboa.
It really was.
It sounded like he had brain damage.
Gosh, it was not, he was not good.
Drunk. No. Why? Why would you stunt cast Stallone there? That's so stupid.
It was really weird casting. And it was also weird because having just seen him in, you know, Creed, which, you know, was Academy Award worthy, even though he didn't get the award, which is insane. But seeing him pull off such a vulnerable, layered performance, see him here, like, oh, this is the Sly that, you know, that we've been used to the last few years, where he's just not good. Not good at all.
No, he went full Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
It was bad. It was so bad.
It was really bad. Yeah. But thankfully, he only had two kind of moments in this movie. Yeah, but I'm led to believe we're going to be getting Sly quite a bit more in the future.
I hope not. But yeah, so number one was Yondu, Rooker. Number two was Drax. Number three for me was actually Kurt Russell as Ego.
Okay. Yeah. So... let's talk about Kurt Russell. I would like to back up for a moment here and maybe talk generally. Did you like this movie? What would you rate it on your Rotten Tomatoes score? Just to know kind of like overall kind of where are you at? And you go first.
Yeah, so for me, I did like the movie. I wasn't a huge fan of the first Guardians of the Galaxy, but I would say this movie's on par with it. So if you like the first one, you're going to like this one. They do a really good fan service. Without being too too annoying about it. It's basically just they continue the universe, and they did a really good job about that. So I would say it is a good movie overall. It's highly entertaining, very enjoyable. I liked it. If I had to give it a score out of 100, I'm probably going to say it's a solid 77.
Okay.
And that's basically where I am with all the Marvel movies.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Yeah, so.
Higher or lower than Doctor Strange?
I would say it's probably higher than Doctor Strange. Oh, okay. I like Doctor Strange, but this is probably a better movie overall. Just because, you know, for me, I find these characters way more interesting than the regular Marvel characters because, first of all, I don't know them. I have no connection to them. And they can do more interesting things. They have there's more elements to their personalities that are distinctly different from the rest of the Marvel universe, like Iron Man and all them.
Yeah.
The rest of the Avengers. So I think that it's more interesting just because it's different. I like the fact that these the Guardians are space-based and they have zero interest of ever going back to Earth, as from what I can tell. Because, you know, Earth is where the Avengers are rooted, essentially, except for Thor. So this is like, if this makes them distinctly different. And there's a border that hopefully they don't cross. I mean, obviously they're going to at some point, but I like the fact that they just live in outer space.
Yeah.
So overall, good movie. I'd recommend it, especially if you like the first one.
Yeah. I largely agree with you there. It's interesting. The Rotten Tomato score is pretty close to where you put it personally. The actual score is, I think, 79 now. It was 85 when it certified, but I think it's like 80 or 79 now.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I do too. It's interesting, though, because the first one was like 92, 93, which seems really high. A lot of that has to do with the fact that when the first Guardians came out, I mean, it really zagged, right? When the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe was, you know, going the other way. They were zigging and Guardians was zagging. And that has to do with like the way they employ humor, the fact that they have, you know, a talking raccoon or trash panda and a tree voiced by Vin Diesel. Right. You have Chris Pratt that, you know, people knew from Parks and Rec, but who knew if he was going to be. And
I know him from Zero Dark Thirty.
Well, honestly, I knew him as Scott Hatterberg from Moneyball. I mean,
that's right.
And so it was such a different one. And the other thing that made it unique is that it was very overly sentimental. Whole holding hands, I am Groot, you know, the Marvel films can get sentimental, but not to this level. I mean, it was way more than these films. And so it was unique, the sense of family. And so for me, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is just, it's a really great extension of that first one. It is right in that same vein. It is this sounds negative, but I mean it in a really good way. It is absolutely more of the same. So when you say, you know, if you loved the first Guardians, you know, I have yet to hear in reviews or otherwise people that loved the first one and really didn't like the second one. If it's one thing to not like the second one because you also didn't like the first one, that makes sense. But it's really just kind of more of the same. If anything, I would say the second one is more consistently funny. I mean, absolutely. I mean, it killed in my theater.
Yeah.
People were.
Yeah, I think so. And I think you have to, you owe some of that to the fact that James Gunn, he directed both of them.
Oh, yeah. Wrote and directed both. Yeah.
Yeah, we've seen from Marvel that they do like to change up the directors for some of the sequels. I think Jon Favreau got 1 and 2 of the Iron Man. Yep. We didn't get 3. They're giving James Gunn control of part 3 as well. I don't know the Captain America director. I don't know how many he did.
Just the first one?
I think he just did the first one.
Yeah, and then
right?
The second and third were the Russo brothers. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. There you go. So I think James Gunn has a complete he has a grasp of these characters, a flawless grasp, because he understands how to create the setting, the perfect setting for them to thrive in. So, and I think that's what he did really well with this movie. I think he did it better in the first one, obviously, because, you know, it's just the better movie.
Yeah.
It's always more fun to introduce characters, and I think than to continue their story. And I think that that speaks to your point about how he kind of switched narratives to the Yondu character. He was searching. I think he was searching for that that character that he could give an arc to. And he found it with Yondu.
Absolutely.
And I think it worked really well. Yeah. Because we saw that similar arc in number one with Star-Lord.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right.
And he couldn't do it again. Obviously, he couldn't do it again. And I think that's one of the things I didn't like about this movie is that Star-Lord is basically just set filler. I mean, he doesn't do anything, really. He's pretty passive for about three quarters
of the movie. He's majorly sidelined.
Right. And then when we do see him get some meat in the final act, in basically the last quarter of the movie, it's kind of anticlimactic because the stakes aren't... I mean, obviously the stakes are very high because if he fails, the galaxy belongs to Ego. Mm-hmm. But it feels like an unearned victory because it feels a little cheapened because, I mean, he basically just picks up at the end of his story.
Yeah.
So
yeah, this is
that didn't work too well.
You're right. This is Yondu's movie, which is what makes it fascinating. I will say that this movie was way better than I was expecting it to be, and that has a lot to do with one, the trailer being just downright terrible, and even more terrible having seen the film, because that trailer just wasn't representative at all of the product. The trailer was really largely revolving around one scene that's actually towards the end of the film that seems really stupid to put in trailer.
I know, isn't that weird?
Because it was clear to me watching the trailer or watching the movie that I hadn't gotten that scene yet. Oh, it must be at the end, and it started clicking to me what was going to happen. So nothing was really surprising because I knew it was coming. And two, it's not that good of a scene. And there are some really good scenes in this movie, and it just seems so weird. That was the one that they chose to be kind of representative. So weird.
It feels out of place. I will say that that's probably one of it's one of the funnier jokes in the movie. Had they not spoiled it in the trailer with the whole button pushing thing, that's a bit that totally works. I thought that worked really well, but they spoil it in the trailer.
Yeah.
So stupid.
It is really stupid. Yeah, I did think it was a lot better. I certainly think Guardians 1 was, was a better film overall. But it's hard for sequels. The reason why Guardians 1 was so fun was because these are new characters that no one really knew anything about, and they're obscure comic book characters. And it was fun to get to know them and to see how they were all going to gel. That's so hard to do in a sequel to keep it as entertaining when you don't have that constructor to follow. And so I thought it was pretty miraculous what they pulled off. With that being said, I think they went way overly sentimental, way more so than the first one, and to a point that I was kind of like, not quite eye-rolling, but almost. It was kind of like, okay, easy.
I eye-rolled with Groot. I mean, the baby Groot stuff.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, people loved it.
Oh.
I was tired of it.
People were loving. People were loving baby Groot.
I just got so tired of it by the end. I was like,
okay. People were loving baby Groot.
Yeah.
Now we're going to come back to Kurt Russell because you had mentioned your MVP list. Baby Groot for me is, he's got to be in my top three. Lindsay was, going. I mean, she was there for Baby Groot. She was loving every bit of every scene he was in. He or she, I don't know. gender neutral. I have no idea. I think actually it's a he is the.
He has a twig.
Right. So. I will say with these movies, so I do have a handful of criticisms. One, what I mentioned, overly sentimental. Two, the stakes are never actually that high for me. Now you mentioned the stakes being high with Ego and whatnot, and yeah, that's high. But I'm never ever concerned. Like when the when they're being chased by all those ships from the whatever it was called, the Sovereign.
Yeah, the Sovereign. Yeah.
It was never a moment in my mind that's like, oh no, they're gonna actually, put them in a really tight spot, or they're gonna go down and actually die, or anything at all. Like, there were no moments that I felt like they were truly in danger, really ever. But a lot of it has to do with the fact that these films are a lot more lighthearted, and a lot more kind of jokey, and they're able to kind of get out of everything in a way that just. I was never really concerned.
Right.
And also because I knew kind of the sacrificial character they had started establishing towards the beginning, I knew if someone's going to die here, it's going to be Yondu, right? That's who's going, and that's who eventually went. Even though Yondu was a brutal, merciless murderer who killed all of his friends that turned on him, he killed like 50 dudes with his little arrow in like 5 minutes. I mean, yeah.
Well, they gave him a heart in this, though. They gave him a heart.
Oh, I guess so. yeah, I know Yondu is your number one here in terms of the MVP. I will say, I wasn't really bought in with his death scene. I felt like it was so over the top sentimental, and I get why they made it that way. And I get the whole like theme here was like the biological father versus the actual father that raised him.
Right.
And like that emotional, which I think is a fine, you know, theme and path to go down. I mean, it's a well, you know, a well-traveled path in cinema, but like did they make his death ceremonious?
Yeah, they sure did.
It was, I mean, literally, I mean, like, Sly Stallone came back to have a little, like, firework show. I mean.
Yeah, the firework show was, that was kind of embarrassing. Like, if we're going to be honest, that was pretty embarrassing. But, no, you hit on a point. Like, the subheading of this movie could be, it's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, subheading, Daddy Issues.
Yeah.
Because every character, every other character has daddy issues.
Yep.
Like, this is like a Steven Spielberg movie on steroids. It's like, give me a break.
It was. I mean, really, all of them do. You have Gamora.
Exactly, with Thanos. And then you have even Rocket. Like, even Rocket was like, he was kind of like, at some point, Yondu was like his substitute dad.
Yeah.
And then he also saw himself in him. It's like, oh, come on, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, the reference to him being made in a lab and other things. And idea of where he came from and.
Right. Right. And then you have the family issues of Drax with his whole his family being dead or gone or whatever. So he's the daddy. I don't know, man. It's just like it's such a common theme that they keep hitting. They hit you over the head with it.
It was too much.
Yeah, they sure do.
So Kurt Russell.
The real daddy.
The real daddy. The ego. Yeah. The daddy with an ego. I love Kurt Russell. You and I were talking at the beginning of the pod. There's no real anti-Kurt Russell people, I would hope, because he's great. I did feel like he was great in this movie up until the last act.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like any character or any like nuance, anything at all built up, you know, with this whole ego character was lost once it kind of just went full like God mode.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a little bit of a shame. It became someone interesting, even if he's evil, to just kind of like this, oh, okay, well, I don't really. He became less, you know, I guess embodied.
Yeah, well, I think they had to do that because they were obviously turning Yondu into Star-Lord's dad.
Right.
So they couldn't do two of the same character. So they just made Ego basically a caricature. But I thought Russell, for what he was given, he did a really good job.
Yeah.
I will say the young Kurt Russell CGI, I mean, you know, we're huge fans of the young CGI thing on this podcast. And I will say this one could be the best.
It is the best.
Yeah.
It's the best one.
They did a bang up job. It looks awesome.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
But can I say, that's not what young Kurt Russell looked like.
It isn't. It isn't. You're right. No, like, you're exactly right. I'm really glad you brought this up because watching it, what's interesting is, you know, the examples we have here are Jeff Bridges, right? Which is in the same elder statesman, to use your term, in Hollywood. We have that, obviously, the Rogue One, other things. We have Benjamin Button, which is, you know, not exactly the same, but it's the principle of CGI to make, you know, younger is, you know. But watching it for the first time, I thought the CGI looks spectacular. It doesn't look like a fake human being, but it looks like if we had no record of what Kurt Russell looked like when he was younger, and we just took his older face and went, we think this face would look like this in a young version. Like that's what they did, rather than base it on like actual, you know, movies, films with young Kurt Russell. Because looking at him was like, oh, that's Kurt Russell's old face, de-aged. The wrinkles are gone. The face is the same, though. It just looks like if you didn't have actual proof. So why did they do it that way?
I don't understand. Because everyone that watches movies knows what young Kurt Russell looks like. And it's not that.
Nope. It's not
that at all.
It's hilarious.
I thought that was pretty weird.
At least Yeah, it was so weird. It was like old Kurt Russell made to look young, not actual young Kurt Russell. But thankfully the CGI looked good, because had they done, you know, the combo of both of those things, of, you know, make not doing a good CGI version and then actually not looking at, you know, that would have been a real disaster. But thankfully it was never distracting.
So did talking about Russell and Star-Lord's connection to him, Ego and Yondu, did you feel like there's a parallel between Star-Lord and Luke Skywalker, how Vader is the Ego character and Yondu is kind of like the Ben Kenobi? Did you feel like there's some sort of connection there, like a parallel?
No, I never really put that together, because Ben Kenobi was so far removed from Luke.
How about Yoda?
Or like, I mean, it would be like Uncle Ben. Yeah, and Aunt Beru, I guess. Or Uncle Owen, excuse me, not Uncle Ben.
Yeah,
Uncle Owen is what I meant to say.
Because I felt like they were trying to give us a Vader moment between Star-Lord and Ego. And I think they were searching for something like that, and it just isn't there.
Well, it's hard, because we didn't know he was bad until, you know.
Right.
Like, Vader was established bad from the beginning, which is what made the shock so, you know, that's the reveal so shocking.
Exactly.
Where Ego was like, we got a sense that he was bad once Mantis started going nuts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like...
Oh, she was great, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Some of the best jokes were her and Drax.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know who that actress is, but she did a great job.
No, she was really good. But yeah, I think you're right onto the Vader thing, the idea of being like, you know, the connection of like, I want to be, like, I want to have a relationship with my father, but he's bad. And what do I, like, so how do I reconcile that? I think you're right.
Right.
I don't know that.
And then now I have to kill him.
And now I have to kill him. Thing. Right, exactly.
Right.
I think the Yondu comparison is less probably true, too, because we didn't really get to know who raised Luke. But I think you're right on the Vader moment. It's just, you can't really do that anymore effectively.
No, especially if you're, I mean, you're basically just going to save their interactions to the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
Other than a passing conversation that they had. So,
can I tell you how much I loved the opening sequence of this film?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. I just felt like, what a smart way, what a creative way, an interesting way to open the film. Like, we're used to these movies opening up, and we're used to this kind of formula where, you know, especially in sequels of any action type franchise, where it opens up some major set piece action sequence that happens that's often not related to the rest of the film, right? It's kind of like you open with an action, something happens, and then you get the credits roll in the opening credits.
Like Luke and the Tauntaun. On Hoth.
No, not exactly. That still mattered to the rest of the movie.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, because that's where Obi-Wan tells him to go to Dagobah. But anyway, but like, we're used to this happening, especially in the Marvel films, and where two things were great about the opening scene. One, everything they were doing actually had ramifications throughout the rest of the movie, and that was the Sovereign people continually chasing them. But two, the focus on Groot, Baby Groot, as he's running around. And I know you didn't love Baby Groot, but I loved how they had this kind of like focus on just a character, and then everything around it was going on. I just thought it was so clever.
I think that was the best. That was one of the best scenes in the entire movie.
Yeah, so good.
That was my favorite Baby Groot scene.
No, it was very good.
They did a really great job there. That's one of the moments where I thought the soundtrack equaled the song choices equaled the first Guardians.
Yeah.
Overall, I didn't think they did as good a job as that first Guardians with the song choices. But that specific scene, that's a great use of the song.
Yeah.
Also, the song choice where Ego or Kurt Russell is meeting Star-Lord's mom.
Oh yeah,
the Brandy song. That's awesome. Did a great job there.
Yes, great.
But overall, I didn't think the music was as good as the first one. But yeah, that first scene, they did a great job, and that points to where we talked about them creating that universe and sliding back into it seamlessly. That's it right there. That first opening sequence.
You know, wrapping up here, one of my other questions I had. Do you feel like the pop culture references and the 80s references and whatnot go overboard in these movies. It's a, such a hallmark.
Yeah. I will say I did get tired of it until the guy hands him the Zune at the very end. Yeah. For me, that really landed. I actually laughed out loud. That was one of the few times I did laugh out loud.
That was pretty good.
So yeah, it can get tired.
Yeah, I usually don't mind too much. I do feel like they really went a little bit too much in this one.
Oh, what I didn't love is when the Sovereign were were controlling the drones, and it was like they're in an arcade.
Oh yeah,
the arcade sound, like that was kind of lame.
That seemed weird. Yeah, that was like a weird. David Hasselhoff.
Oh yeah,
coming on set, I thought was actually really, but and also worked to what you know to the reference that he kept making about,
yeah,
telling people. I thought that was pretty good.
That was pretty good too.
Anyway, well, we're at an hour. Any other last thoughts on Guardians?
I think they did a great job, and I'm in for part three. So.
Great. Hopefully, part three is better than the end credit scenes that they had for this one.
and I skipped those, so you're gonna have to.
There were like four of them. And I don't know if what I was expecting, but they were all kind of throwaway. Just, you know, they were fine. It was fun, but it wasn't anything. You didn't see Captain America or you know, Tony Stark come in.
Oh, jeez.
They were just deleted scenes.
But, so we know that for sure they're going to be in the, when they did the expanded
Infinity
Universe.
Wars. They're going to be in these next Avengers films. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Which I thought because of that, we would have some of these end credit sequence would have it, but no. So.
Well, let's see how they handle that.
It'll be really interesting because that's a lot of characters on screen to handle.
Yeah.
So.
What's the time frame for that? Do we know when that's going to start shooting? Or
yeah, they've already started shooting the first one, I believe.
Okay.
And they may not come to the second one. So I guess it was supposed to be Infinity Wars 1 and 2, but now they're going to call them two different movies. So I don't know if they're still shooting them back to back. So it might just be like their own standalone Avengers films. I'm not sure, but it could be the second one that they come in.
That'll be interesting. Last point. I want to say this is the Stan Lee cameo in this one could be in my top three of all time.
Really?
Stan Lee cameos. Loved it.
Oh,
I loved the way
because there's been people talking about how, you know, should we be done with these Stan Lee cameos? Because,
no way.
Okay.
That was great. That was really funny little moment. So
you loved it.
Yeah. I was a big fan.
Good. Awesome. Well, that's all I got to say. Sounds like you and I both were surprised. You know,
very much so.
So
pleasantly.
Yes. Tweet us your thoughts if you think we're wrong about any criticisms. If we, you
Baby
know,
Groot.
If
I'm an idiot for not liking Baby Groot, tell me.
If you're Team Baby Groot, or if you think the kind of over sentimentality works, let us know.
If you're a big Sylvester Stallone fan.
Oh yeah.
And you got to. And you want to give us a piece of your mind.
Yes. Which I am, usually. Kind of. This was bad.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Terrible.
Well, thanks, Aaron. We'll be back next week. I'm not sure what's coming out, but because we are in the movie season now.
We've officially kicked off the
summer movie season. Yes, exactly. I'm pulling up what's upcoming here. We got King Arthur. Oh, speaking of Kurt Russell, we've got Snatched with Goldie Hawn and Oof. Amy Schumer, your favorite actress right now.
Yeah, no.
So we'll see what we do here. Maybe I don't know if we're gonna catch King Arthur. We sure as heck are gonna hit Alien Covenant on May 19th. So.
Oh yeah, I'm pumped for that one.
Good. All right, man. As we say, hold on to your butts.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.